Across the country, folks are listening to A Nerd? Yep. Guiding you on your computer quest, here is Benjamin Rockwell with Computer Talk Radio.
We've got a bunch in store for you this week on Computer Talk Radio. Keith and I are going to talk about Apple Intelligence and how it's not motivating Apple customers. Marty has an Anker Charger projector. He's also got a J5 Create power meter cable. That's an interesting one. We'll talk about that. Steve Geske, he's going to talk about military usage of robots. That's an exciting one. And then on the IT Pro series, return to office mandates are sending high performers packing. On the scam series, well, an Amazon renewal notice that I received, it isn't real. We've got listener questions. Harry asks, why do we no longer have to defragment our hard drives? And I'm going to get a little bit wonky on that one. But what is going to be the eventual demise of Blu-ray players? We'll cover that one. Tracy asks, what is the viability of tablets for full-time computing? And I've got some stats that are not good. And then I'm also going to talk about the Magnuson-Moss Warranty Act. All of that is on to this week's Computer Talk Radio. And if you miss any of it, you can go to the website, computertalkradio.com, computertalkradio.com. Of course, you can reach me there. You can also phone me at 888-NERD. 888. That's 888-6373-888. I'm always interested in answering your computer questions, your technology concerns, so please feel free to reach out either way. Let's dive into the news from this past weekend. Apple Intelligence, this is their own branding of AI, which really is artificial intelligence. Well, it has some problems in that people aren't really enthused by this. Nearly half of the people surveyed, this is 2,000 people, about 1,000 of them were iPhone users. They stated that it is an important factor in their smartphones, but nearly three quarters of those who have used Apple Intelligence feel that the features don't add enough value to the experience. That's pretty rough. And Samsung users, well, they don't feel it's important either, to the tune of nearly a quarter of them, citing accuracy and privacy issue. Further, fewer actually interested on either side to pay for these features. This is not good for Apple. And they've really put a lot of their primary features for 18, or rather iOS 18, focused on artificial intelligence and leaving a lot of the other innovations behind. Keith and I are going to talk about that a little bit more later on in this week's show. Now, it was in 2020 when the world marveled over this guy, Elon Musk, who broke the $100 billion net worth. This week, it came out that Mark Zuckerberg, well, he's worth $219 billion. Jeff Bezos, $250 billion. And Elon Musk, you might want to sit down for this one, $486 billion. The rest of the numbers I could relate to you are staggering. I mean, Elon's net worth jumped $12 billion, $12 billion in one day this week, with less than half of the money he made this year, which is $257 billion. He could buy Boeing at $114 billion. That's his next nearest commercial competitor. Boeing, big, huge, behemoth Boeing could be picked up for half of what he earned this year in his net worth. Now, name any car company. No. Forget car companies. Name almost any company in the world shy of the top 16 in market capitalization, and he is worth more than they are. He's worth about $25 million for every day in his life. That's a staggering sum. How do you even just grasp that? $25 million for every day he's been alive. Now, TP-Link has become one of the best-selling wireless routers in the United States. There's an estimate about 65% of us are using them. They're throughout our homes, businesses, and even in our government agencies. Well, they have some security flaws. They've been used in hack attacks from China and a lot more. There's a lot of struggle for where these hack attacks come from, especially since, well, the fact that they're made in China. And for that reason, they're coming under heavy scrutiny. The Departments of Commerce, Defense, and Justice, all three of them, are launching investigations into if TP-Link should be banned like some of the other Chinese-made tech products. Now, it's too early to tell. We can't really predict what's going to happen next. But we've got an idea when we start looking at DJI drones. There's a potential dramatic shift in the products that are available to us for Wi-Fi. Who would have thought? Yeah, this is going to be interesting. You ever book a hotel for $100, but after you were checking out, you found, $50 in additional fees that were not, you just couldn't avoid them? What about concert tickets? Okay, we go, we buy these tickets, reservations for hotels or whatever, and all of a sudden we find out we're paying so much more when we leave, when we're finished with all of the process, that we're really turned off by it. The good news is coming in that the Federal Trade Commission instituted a junk fees rule this week that requires all of the pricing and advertisements and websites and more. They're going to have to include the true prices of what you're looking to get. What you see up front needs to match the final price that you're going to be charged in a transparent way. As always, this law is going to take 120 days to go into effect, and my cynical side says we can all bet that there's going to be a lot of big shot lawyers jumping in to try and stop this. They're going to say that the government isn't being fair. We should be able to hide all of these different fees, these resort fees, these whatever it is, these add-ons that just seem to make no sense because, well, that's how they dig deeper in our pockets. And there are always going to be people. I've got to admit, there's always going to be people who are going to look to justify why they need to charge us more money. Now, the saga of the Boeing astronauts who've been stuck in space far longer than expected, well, it continues. Their original stay, we go back to last July. June. Their original stay on the ISS was supposed to be 1 week long, and then that started to drag out. They went up on the Boeing Starliner, and the Boeing Starliner had a number of different problems with it, and the decision was made, hey, we do not want to risk lives on this. Boeing took a really big hit from across the board. I've been kind of mean to them. That mean isn't the right word, but I have not been very supportive of them in this because it looks bad. The reality is everybody says this looks bad. Everybody looks at this and goes, yeah, this is not good PR. Anyways, there's a delay in the next flight launch from SpaceX. The folks who are coming to rescue the astronauts. Suni Williams and Butch Wilmore, it looks like they may not be back until later March or sometime in April. Now, related to the International Space Station, Russia has announced that they've decided to extend their stay until 2030 when the ISS is retired and then shoved back into our atmosphere to burn up on reentry. And there are a number of companies that are stepping forward and they're bidding on the process to provide the replacement unit that is going to go up into space. But that's another story. The value of continued experiments in space, the building of relationships in zero G, and so much more. This is really proving to be a good value to Russia. And I think this is at least a bit of good news for all of the rest of us. Now, I'm not sure what to make of Walmart's latest pilot program. It seems that they're giving their store associates body cameras to wear during normal operations. Now, they say part of this is for loss prevention, as well as to reduce conflicts in their stores and to improve worker safety. This follows much of the same type of operations done with police officers across the country. Now, there are detractors saying that this is the next step in surveillance of employees. Well, I appreciate the stance. It seems like a weak argument. We're going to have to see how this all plays out on this big, huge, expanding experiment. Coming up next, I'm going to talk about the Magnuson-Moss Warranty Act and some of the very good things that have been around for a very good long time to protect us. This is Benjamin Rockwell. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment.
Let's talk about on and off.
You mean like light switches?
Yeah, the original user interface device.
And you were there, right?
Hey, I'm not that old.
Yeah, you are. So on and off.
Yeah, only with no humans doing it, like...
going down.
But you and I both have our computers on CyberPower UPS systems.
Yeah, so we have power, but there's another on and off.
Oh, right. Online and offline.
You got it. Meaning another UPS at the cable modem and VoIP phone and Wi-Fi router.
And even a low-cost standby UPS can handle those. Better, of course, if it has AVR.
Right, so it doesn't have to hit the battery just because the line voltage drops.
Maybe it's a good time to mention the promo that saves $10 to $15. Details are at the CyberPower website.
And maybe you could put it on your website?
Oh, that's already done at ComputerTalkRadio.com.
You know, on and off, you take really good care of your listeners.
Phone number 888-NERD 888, that's 888-6373-888. I was in a conversation with a buddy of mine, and we were talking about just a little bit of repair work that I was doing on one of my computer items, and he kind of freaked out. He was like, okay, what about the stickers that are preventing you from opening it up? Like, I break them? No, but they say warranty void if removed. Doesn't that worry you at all? No, not at all. I mean, we've all seen these. And they are a scare tactic. They are a way to keep you from getting in there and messing things up under the idea that your warranty would be void. But really, it isn't going to void your warranty. The manufacturers, they go out of their way to really explicitly note or even imply in their end user license agreements that their warranties mean nothing if you dive into whatever it is you're trying to repair. Or even sometimes if you perhaps take it to a third party repair company. What is all of this scare tactic worth? What is it really worth? Nothing. Absolutely zero. Absolutely. It is not even worth the paper it's written on. All right. So one perfectly good example was we had a problem with our clothes washer in the house. And I looked up online how to repair this whole thing where it just shook back and forth. And it was just a matter of replacing some rods and springs in four corners of the washer. It's actually a really simple thing. If you call someone out to repair this, they're going to charge you hundreds of dollars. I will tell you, it is one of the more simple self-repair items I've done. And in the middle of doing that, yes, what did I come across? Yeah, one of those stickers. Now, these big companies, they threaten all kinds of different things. They'll ignore you. They'll claim that you broke the product first or whatever. There's an interesting thing that's going to have to work its way forward. Toyota has started to decline warranties if you drive over a certain speed. You drive over 85 miles an hour. Okay, we're not going to warranty your engine anymore. Well, that doesn't actually apply. Because there's a federal law that's been around since the 1970s, the Magnuson-Moss Warranty Act. It was actually put in place in 1975 by a couple of senators. I'll let you guess who they were. Actually, there were two gentlemen by the name of Moss. One of them was Warren Magnuson. And John E. Moss and Frank Moss were the two gentlemen that were named Moss. And this Magnuson-Moss Warranty Act was a check against manufacturers that use deceptive practices in their warranties. So all three of those senators, they've passed away since. But the act itself that they put forward, the laws that they set up for us as consumers, are some of the best ones ever written. Now, I went through and I replaced those items, and I do all kinds of different repairs on my own. We're allowed to do that. But now let's talk about one of the other directions. Have you heard of lemon laws? If you drive a car, you probably have heard of them. And usually talking about cars, they actually came from the Magnuson-Moss Warranty Act, where it covered that a warranty cannot be rendered invalid simply because you used aftermarket parts in your car. It basically says you can do whatever you want. You own that. Does that stop any of these companies from harassing us, from keeping their repairs from us, from all of these different things? No, like some of the car companies over the years, General Motors was big for this for a little while. They tried, and every once in a while they'll go through and they'll pursue the idea of, okay, there's a trademark on this. We have a copyright here and ownership of intellectual property. Well, we can use that to prevent you from altering the car's hardware, or yes, even the software. Okay, now we do struggle because we've talked about how you only hold a license to use your car's software and computer, and you don't actually own. Yeah, okay. They put these things forth. It doesn't mean it's legal. It doesn't mean that if you take them to court that you're going to lose. You may have to jump through a few hoops across the way. And yes, they will fight you in at every stopping point in all of these different hoops. You may have to spend a bit of time. And that is one of the ways that they're discouraging people. And it actually is kind of, they know what the law is. They are very aware of the Magnuson-Moss Warranty Act. It's been, again, since the 1970s, 1975. It's been around that long. But yes, even knowing that, they're going to try and do these tricky little things to slow you down. Whether we're talking about the Xbox or the PlayStation or Apple. Apple says, important, don't open the Apple product. Opening the Apple product may cause damage that is not covered by this warranty. Only an Apple-certified tech or Apple themselves should ever perform service on any Apple product. Okay, so Keith, he does this all the time, and he's gone through various certifications over the years, and they keep changing the whole target point of what he has to do in order to be certified, and they play games with him even. And yes, even Apple employees and your Verizon and AT&T employees, they look for evidence that you've gone exploring and that you've gotten the phone wet and all of that. And they're known for refusing service on devices based on whatever evidence they find. Notice the words may and should in that Apple item. They may cause damage. Only Apple should perform. Well, that's vague, and it actually protects Apple a little bit better. But it doesn't mean that that's going to slow them down from harassing you when you have a problem. You and I, we're just individual consumers walking in, and if they can wear us down, if they can break down our resolve, yes, at times that will mean that we will back down. But the reality is, this act does protect us. But you have to know your rights, and you have to press hard early on. You and I aren't going to stand a chance for a while on our limited budgets to sue somebody like Microsoft or Apple or Dell or General Motors. But you can bring these things up. You can exercise your rights when you're dealing with customer service. Because you're dealing with a store, you're not dealing with lawyers, you can go ahead and reference Magnuson Moss. I've dropped the name a few times because I want you to remember this. Yes, $50,000 is what a lawyer wants before he'll take on a case for you. And your smartphone is worth what? $1,000? And after a year, it's worth half that. And another year goes by, it's half of that. So, yeah, it kind of wears you down. You go, look, all right, I've had the phone for 2 years. And, you know, fine, I'm not going to argue it. But you can use these different efforts. So let's dive into what this act does protect you against. All right. Unauthorized repair, unauthorized replacement parts, they can't claim either of those. Broken stickers, no worries. Aftermarket enhancements, cool stuff, actually. Recycled or used components, look, just like your car, it's perfectly fine for them to put in something that is aftermarket or used, so why not yourself? The companies will fight you, but if you remember the Magnuson Moss Warranty Act and you drop that at the right time, if somebody knows what that is, that may help you. So remember it again, Magnuson Moss Warranty Act. This is Benjamin Rockwell. You are listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment.
Micro Center, home to all kinds of electronics and computer items, has over 20 locations across the country, and it's also available at microcenter.com. This is Benjamin Rockwell of Computer Talk Radio, and I live just a couple of miles away from my local Micro Center, and I've been shopping there for years. From Apple to Windows, they've got what you need. CPUs, got them. Screwdrivers and other tools, yep. Cables, televisions, scanners, projectors, cameras, they have it all. Micro Center is a place which fills your electronic needs. What are you looking for? Media centers, monitors, mice, MP3 players, media, modems, motherboards, memory? Those are just the M's. They aren't regional, but spread across our great land from Virginia to California. Each one is service and repair, in-store clinics, and business services, too. MicroCenter.com is their online store, a place where you can get your regular online ordering needs met. From the hobbyist to the professional, the brand name, or building it yourself, MicroCenter is your resource. Check out MicroCenter.com today. MicroCenter.com.
Website, ComputerTalkRadio.com, ComputerTalkRadio.com. That's how you can reach out to us. Scroll down to where it says contact us today, and we will get back to you with answers to your computer questions and your technology concerns. Keith Amsidor joins me now, and Keith, you and I had an exchange of text messages in regards to your starting to lament what's going on with Apple. And especially it came out of this survey. Most iPhone users uninterested in Apple intelligence. So let me ask you, as an iPhone user, as a consultant, as somebody who has a pulse on what is going on with people who have Apple tech, what are you seeing, experiencing?
Well, Benjamin, I wouldn't necessarily categorize it as a lamentation so much as a just a malaise, a general lack of enthusiasm, because Apple's put a lot of effort into making Apple Intelligence their version of AI, which just so conveniently for them, Apple Intelligence has the same initials as artificial intelligence. So they're going to call it AI, and it's Apple Intelligence. And it's just nobody I have spoken to, not my friends, not my professional colleagues such as yourself, and certainly not my clients. The number of all of those people combined that have inquired to me as an Apple certified consultant in anything related to, and I've got a lot of calls, but should I get the iPhone 16?
Mm-hmm.
Not a single one of them even mentioned, let alone queried, Apple Intelligence, which tells you the zeitgeist isn't having it.
So, you know, and that's the big struggle I've been talking about. So as far as Apple Intelligence goes, I'm barely interested in the concept, just from the Disney carousel of progress, the perspective there. It's nothing that I have any burning desire to pay for. And the rest of the hardware, the rest of iOS 18 delivers nothing exciting for me, whether I'm on my current iPhone 14 or if I were to upgrade to the iPhone 16. I already have a wonderful camera. I already have a decent amount of battery life. I already have all of the different things that I would want out of the hardware. So what do I want?
Well, here's what comes down to, Benjamin. I don't think it has anything to do with what do you want, because everything, again, this falls under the category, is it revolutionary or is it evolutionary? And Apple adding all these features, they're basically just glorified evolutionary steps forward. It's just that the system's going to be a little smarter to handle some of your queries. But I think that we've come to expect lackluster results when we speak to Siri for so long that the idea that if we upgrade our hardware to an iPhone 15 Pro Max or newer, in this case, an iPhone 16 line model, that we're going to somehow be imbued with a much more intuitive and insightful Siri, to say nothing of all these weird Genmojis and really ugly looking computer Apple animated, not animated.
Yeah, I get where you're going.
Drawing features, it leaves me disinterested. I mean, that's really the best word to put it, because the reality of it is, while Siri has gone downhill over the years, I remember when Siri was a standalone app by a third-party company.
Yeah,
it was really neat. And when Apple first bought it, and it was available, I think, on the iPhone 4S, it was really useful. And then when they had to start putting on more servers and it was getting more queries and it became more popular, it actually got dumber. And I moved for my AI needs, for my home automation needs, to the Amazon ecosystem for those things.
Yeah.
I got Echoes throughout my house, and I use the Echo app for home automation. And the reality of it is, Amazon's done a better job.
So I'm looking at this, and I'm thinking that the death of their own P.T. Barnum, Steve Jobs, is starting to really impact Apple in a bad way. And especially, what was the entry point for the rest of the Apple ecosystem for the last, whatever it is, 15 years?
Yeah, Steve Jobs died in 2011.
Yeah. But it's just now that it's starting to catch up. They lucked out a few times, but you and I have both discussed that a lot of what we've seen out of Apple in the last 7 years has been evolutionary, not revolutionary, just as you said a moment ago.
You know, is it great to have a battery that lasts all day, that I then come home, put it on a nightstand, and maybe not even need a charge? Yeah, that's wonderful. Is it great to have a brighter, sharper screen? Yeah, it's wonderful. Is it great to be able to take really super far away pictures because they've really, really gotten their hands on their lensing systems? for optical, not just digital.
Sure, yeah, yeah.
They're great. I love it. Apple's doing a great job in those things, nudging the bar forward. But they haven't done anything that absolutely advances it by a giant leap and bound, rather than just continually moving the bar forward, you know, an inch at a time.
Yeah. And I'm not looking for going back to the days when the first iPhone came out, and there was all of this absolutely wonderful whiz-bang stuff that they announced, and everybody was like, wow, this is amazing. But I'd love to see something coming along that's amazing, and I'm not seeing that.
Well, now our expectations have been managed to such a point that everyone's baseline, even to the most non-technical person, everyone's baseline is so high these days that Apple can't raise the bar high enough for themselves to make it look like it's a monumental leap above and beyond what they've already done.
There's just going to be an ongoing struggle, I guess, for them. But
by and large, I mean, you know, Android hasn't either. I mean, the only thing revolutionary they're talking about is will they have a foldable phone, and that doesn't look like it'll still happen until 2027 for Apple at the earliest.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting coming few years to see how this all sorts out. As for now, this is Benjamin Rockwell.
And I'm Keith M. Cedor.
You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment.
Hi, this is Benjamin Rockwell. Most of us use digital cameras nowadays, but what do we do with those old pictures and slides in the back of the closet? Well, let me tell you about Legacy Digital Productions. They specialize in taking your old memories on film, videotape, and slides and digitizing them to DVDs. If you have boxes of old slides, then you know they fade more and more each year. Let Legacy Digital scan them for you and stop the aging process dead in its tracks. You'll get beautiful 10-megapixel digital files, color-corrected and ready for printing. All this is done faster and cheaper than buying a film scanner and doing it yourself. Your files are then burned onto gold archival DVD discs where they will last for generations. Call right now, mention my name, Benjamin Rockwell, and receive a 30% discount on your order. Call toll-free 1-866-2-LEGACY. That's 1-866-2-LEGACY. And tell them Benjamin sent you. Your memories are priceless, so call 866-2-LEGACY now.
Marty Winston joins me now, and Marty, what do you have for us this week?
Oh, some good stuff. Some of my
stocking stuffers?
Oh, you can stuff a whole wardrobe.
It depends on the size of the stockings. Yeah, okay, all right.
Let me start with this, something that I got a kick out of. I like chargers with a lot of ports on them to kind of plug into the AC through something that isn't a wall wart, right?
Yes, yes.
And our pals at Anker sent their, it's got a serial number, an A2345 mm-hmm. prime desktop charger. Now, we know what they do with GAN, gallium aluminum arsenide, or maybe I have that wrong, but GAN.
Nitride? I don't know, whatever it is, GAN chargers.
It's nice.
Which is faster and all of that.
Yeah,
yes.
It handles a lot of power and doesn't heat up very much, right?
Yeah.
Well, this charger is 250 watts of charging capacity in 6 ports. Four of them are
250 watts?
Four of them are okay. USB-C, two of them are USB-A, right?
Yeah, okay.
Now, the USB ports are good. Just one or split it among four for up to 140 of those 250 watts.
Okay, so that's easily a couple of laptops at full bore. And if they're just charging, you could put in four of them charging at a slower rate. So that's really nice.
And there's a switch on the front that gives you some control over where you prefer charging to go.
Okay, nice.
Now, what I like about this, it also has a sleep mode. You know, when it's charging things or not charging things and you're not fiddling with it, when it goes to sleep, you can configure the display to be a time and date clock.
Oh, nice. Okay. We're finally getting back into functionality that we existed for a long time. And then it went to chargers, and they don't have any of that. Not normally, at least. I like that. So, okay.
You know, it's a cute little clock that happens to have seven cords coming out of it.
Okay.
You know, it's about $170. This is, again, the Anker Prime desktop charger. But if you shop around, if you look around, I've seen it as low as 110. So,
okay.
Happy shopping, everybody. One more thing from Anker. One of their Nebula video projectors have been really good. And mm-hmm. the Nebula Cosmos 4K SE is brand new. It uses a hybrid of lasers and an LED because LEDs are more efficient than lasers at producing the red component of color images. Mm-hmm. So, and pricing is down for about $1,100. You get 1,800 ANSI lumens of brightness and a 400:1 contrast ratio in a projector that can show you images from 20 inches to 200 inch diagonal measure. That 200 inches is not remarkable. 20 inches is remarkable. Mm-hmm. It's really hard to get a projector that comes down to human sizes. And this one does. It also runs on the Google TV operating system. It can deliver Dolby audio and Dolby video. The audio is through a pair of 15-watt speakers. It couldn't be more portable if it had a handle on the top. And wait, it does.
It does. Yeah, I'm looking at the picture. I'm like, if it didn't have I'm like, I've seen a handle. And that's actually a cool thing. I love the idea of a handle on these because inevitably, you know, you're doing one of two things when you're dealing with projectors. You're doing it for a permanent installation or you're carrying it around. So, great idea for that.
Yeah. By the way, I have experience working with one of its predecessors, which mm-hmm. had a higher price tag. Specs are a little different. I wouldn't hesitate to choose this one. I think it's a beauty. Now, from another tech company, J5 Create.
Yeah.
A couple of devices that are good for people who believe in things like multimeters.
Okay. So,
one of them, and I'm holding it up for everybody on the radio to see, it's a 4-foot USB cord with USB-C connectors. And one of them is on a little pod with an OLED display that can tell you in a charging environment which way the charge is going. Which direction, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. the voltage, the current, the wattage, and the milliamp hours that have gone by and the amount of time all on that little display. Wow. How many times have you wondered, first of all, if a charger was working or not? And second of all, why it was taking so long?
Well, daily? Daily?
This thing is PD compatible.
Okay.
Power delivery.
Yeah, yeah.
And that means...
So we're talking laptops. We're talking Yeah, okay.
Yeah, it also means that if you're seeing 9 volts, not 5 volts, you know it's in one of the advanced modes. This hits me in the heart. I can't tell you how many times I've wondered how much charge is there. Last item. For people who have...
Well, hold on. You didn't cover the price on that. And I'm seeing the price in your notes here.
It's about $20, everybody.
$20 for the analysis of the electricity that's going through. You know what? That actually excites me a lot, just because that is... I mean,
an everyday challenge.
It's a cord that solves those challenges. So,
indeed it is that.
We'll get to that other item on a future.
No, all right. We've got segment. Plenty coming from J5. Happy holidays, everybody.
This is Benjamin Rockwell. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment. Years ago, I found a web hosting company that fit my needs as a computer nerd, as a radio show host, and just a normal person. Recently, though, it was clear to me that it was time to upgrade.
but I had a choice between my old plan and the new one at 7 times the cost. It was that awkward point where I could choose between a sip of water or being dunked in a pool. I searched around, comparing the many options for someone like me. After searching around for 3 weeks, there it was, SiteGround. In proper fashion, I tested their customer service, their knowledge, and their willingness to do things the right way. The SiteGround salesman made sure that I didn't overbuy and get a 50-gallon bucket when a 32-ounce soda would do. These guys know WordPress, Joomla, and regular standard websites. These guys at SiteGround are awesome. SiteGround.com. Site, S-I-T-E, ground.com.
The bad guys are out to get us. They're out to get you, me, and everybody they can. Deborah sent me an item, and she already knew it was a scam, but she shared it with me at computertalkradio.com. And she noted, good thing I got an email alert from the nice person at WA blah, 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 a bunch of gibberish. This is one of the longer email addresses I've seen as far as a starting, but even the ending is a bunch of different letters just all strung together, .biz.id. Look, it is amazing. When you look at the addresses that some of these places, some of these scammers use, you can easily tell that it's going to be a scam. But it went from there. Hi, customer. Your Amazon Prime membership is set to renew on this particular date, which was very soon. However, we've noticed the payment method associated with your Prime membership is no longer valid. To update the default payment method or choose a new one for your membership, please click on the button below and follow the on-screen instructions. And then, yes, update information. And if you were to click on it, yes, you're going to wind up going to a website that looks very similar to Amazon. There's a lot to this that, as I look at it, there are key indicators for me. It's kind of a weird email. It's framed wrong. It says, hi, customer. And that's that. Usually Amazon knows who we are. If they're going to send you an email with a reminder of something, that's going to be right there. I will tell you the shortcut, by the way. If you get one of these, you want to make sure that everything is set, go to your Amazon account or whoever it is and do it directly. Don't do it off of any of these clicks. The message along the way did include a couple of little oddities, nothing too alarming. Beyond that, the most important thing to highlight is, Deborah said, I've never had a Prime or a Prime membership. So that is a key indicator for a lot of us. And it's interesting in this day and age that one would not have Amazon Prime or one of these others. And this comes in a number of different forms. This is all being sent out, blasted out. I've said this many times before. This is being blasted out. They're hoping to get one person, maybe two people, out of each of these different just big, huge spammings. All they need is just one. That is why I've been doing this scam series for so long. I want to make sure that you are aware that you are not going to fall into these traps, but that you're also not going to help them gain that goal of just a 1% return or 2% return on their investment, because that investment is very low. That amount of time that they spend setting this up, sending it out, and fielding all of this is really low. They can get a lot out of this if they get a 1% return. So don't give into it. Don't give in to any of these little traps that are listed with a bunch of urgency. This is Benjamin Rockwell. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio.
Let me tell you about The Radio Factory, an exciting new venue for talk radio. It's the internet, the wave of the present. My name is Benjamin Rockwell, and I'm the host of a syndicated radio program, Computer Talk Radio. So I know the internet is here and now. Many of the hosts at theradiofactory.com have their own podcasts or radio shows across the country. But many people like the comfort of listening to their own special radio show at a specific time and day, much like we watch live television. The internet, as you're probably aware, is a powerful tool that allows The Radio Factory to deliver unique programming with far more variety than the windbags who are simply about contriving up viewpoints to get you riled up. Additionally, you'll find that many of the programs are shorter, giving more information in less time. Stick with theradiofactory.com and see how it evolves to keep you entertained, interested, informed, and above all, intelligent. After all, the Radio Factory motto is building your intelligence one talk show at a time. Theradiofactory.com.
Across the country, folks are listening to A Nerd? Yep. Bringing you the latest in computers and gadgetry, here's Benjamin Rockwell with Computer Talk Radio.
We are halfway through this week's Computer Talk Radio. The phone number, 888-NERD-888. That's 888-637-3888. That is just one way to reach out to us. You can also check out the website at computertalkradio.com. ComputerTalkRadio.com. Steve Kesky helps us make good on one of our promises, which is radio's broadest look at computers, technology, and how they impact our lives. Steve joins me now. And Steve, what do you have for us this week?
Well,
yes.
As we have been in the past, we have always talked about AI and robotics and all that.
Sure.
And I happened to watch a movie that was all about the military and robotics and AI. And I'm saying...
Was it Terminator?
No.
Okay. All right.
I know I've watched the Terminator, but no.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
But anyway, the foremost developer in robotics and other things is our military.
Sure.
And their components, shall we say. Anyway, and I was wondering, because I'm in two minds about the military using robots.
Okay.
Because I've watched videos and they've used robots for carrying gear.
Yeah.
Because it can carry, the dog that they developed can actually carry a lot more than three guys can carry.
Yeah.
And never get tired. That's a really good part.
Low battery. But then again, the guys get low battery. So,
yeah. Guys get low battery. But and when it comes to air, I spent 20 years in the Air Force and I'm going, and I said, do we really want, shall we say, aircraft that are autonomous? And I have, in war, no.
Yeah.
Okay. In peace, maybe.
All right.
I mean, they're still having problems with autonomous cars.
Sure. And quite a few.
Yeah.
It was just a few weeks ago. Tesla's just unfortunate little number is they're responsible for a higher average per mile driven or per cars or however much. They're responsible for more accidents and more final accidents, if I can use a euphemism. Which is unfortunate for Tesla. It is not a major number, but it's still
a number.
It's still a number, though. So yeah, and I am not so much of two minds about it. I'm with you on the peacetime usage. There is peacetime usage for all manner of of devices, whether we're talking about robotics, whether we're talking about autonomous planes and vehicles and things like that for peacetime. Where I draw the line, though, is the idea of robots being able to do battle, to actually wage war or conflict or whatever term that they want to use off in Washington, D.C.
Yes.
Peacekeeping missions, which are, well, yes. So I am not fond of the idea of sending robots out in place of our men.
No.
Because when we have to send men, when we put the men on the front lines, when we put them out there, there are a number of human factors that start to play into this. It's a matter of there are decisions that are being made live, and those decisions include a certain level of questioning as to if I am doing the right thing, if I'm doing the moral thing versus rolling along like blind lemmings.
That's true.
So, yeah.
Very true. I mean, when I realized that after World War II, mm-hmm. the oath of enlistment changed.
Okay.
Because it said before World War II or during World War II, the oath of enlistment said to obey all orders of your superiors.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Now it says all lawful orders of your superiors.
And I think part of that does come from the fact that some of those orders that were given by the Germans during World War II, correct me if I'm wrong, some of those, you know, we had so many people afterwards say, oh, I was just following orders. Really? Yeah. You were following orders. That doesn't sound like you were using your brain. You were just wandering along doing
whatever you were told to do.
Yeah. And you're excusing that away. That's
why the changed.
Okay. So I was right on that assumption.
Now you have to make the decision. Is this order a lawful order or not?
And I think that robots
would never make the decision.
They're not going to make the decision because that is going to be left out of their programming. Yep. It's going to be, even if we mandate that it's part of their programming, how do we even authenticate that is part of their programming? How do we even, we would have to write in the conscience for them.
Oh, yeah.
Which isn't going to happen. We would have to write in a far deeper level of just reasoning and thinking than what we're capable of and will be capable of for a very long time.
And doing that, all that robotics, you have to understand, violates robot rule number one.
Yes. The entire three laws, and we've discussed the three laws before. I'll run through them real quickly. A robot may not injure a human being or through inaction allow a human to come to harm. Rule number two is a robot must obey the orders given except where those orders conflict with the first law, and a robot must protect its own existence so long as that doesn't conflict with the first or second law. So I mean, that's just a basic variation on it. And there are other addendums to those laws. Yeah. But, you know, I really sit here and I think we're not going to be able to, as simple as those laws are, we're not going to be able to truly enforce them if we go down that path and people are anxious to put any kind of autonomous item, whether we're talking programmatically or AI driven,
right,
and directed and all of that, we're not going to be able to really go to that without it being 100% reliable. There's just no way. And that's That's why I say we can't make that decision.
No, and we shouldn't go down that. To me, don't go down that attitude or avenue. And like I said, you know, it's okay if they're in a support vehicle, you know, pulling up supplies or taking them out into the field, sure, and following a live soldier. But that's okay. But having it actually fire a weapon, that really grates on me and my nerves.
Sure. And I understand that. Unfortunately, I think we are going to go in the direction where, over the long haul, AI is going to tell us that we have so many, no matter how simple those three laws are, we have so many different problems with that we should just abolish the three laws, which is really not a good idea.
Nope.
And AI, you know, there have been a number of movies. iRobot comes to mind.
Yeah.
Which, starring Will Smith and a few other people. And AI may become misguided. And it's interesting. I think we've got a lot of dystopian potential future. Does that mean it's going to happen? No. Again, potential. But any quick last comments before we wrap up? Well,
I agree with you. It's all potential, but we should always, and all of us should be aware of it and be thinking about all of this.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. As for now, that's Steve Keske. This is Benjamin Rockwell. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment. You have a couple of those new carbon open frame racks from CyberPower, right?
Yeah, I love them. I configured a 25U to 40 inches deep, about twice as deep as a regular rack, and put more than a dozen peripherals in it.
You know, I saw your article about it. I can't believe it's not clutter.
And my 45U carbon rack, that's also 40 inches deep, will hold a ton of networking and control systems, the network video recorder.
Holy screwdriver, rack man!
You're getting one of their gorgeous enclosed racks soon.
Oh yeah, the 24U. Bigger than their wall mount carbon racks, but smaller than their tall boy.
Did you see what's happening with carbon on the CyberPower website?
Oh yeah, the promo, 10% off all their racks and rack accessories through the end of September. I put a link up at computertalkradio.com. computertalkradio.com. Nerd 888. That's 888-637-3888. Now, in Harry's case, he reached out to me in regards to solid state drives, and he was trying to understand. Years ago, he used to defragment his hard drive, and we have stated for a while now, if you have solid state drives, you don't need to defragment them. You no longer need to run that operation, which, depending on the computers, I remember some of the computers years ago would take hours and hours. You'd run it overnight, and it would still be running in the morning. So we had to do that back then because the way hard drives worked way back then, and this is, I'm going to refer to hard drives as opposed to solid-state drives here for the rest of this. The solid-state drives are the ones that are running on chips. They're very much like your flash drive, what we used to call thumb drives. And hard drives, I'm going to refer to those as the ones with what we call platters. They have rotating platters that go through and they store the information on. Now, back in those days, back when we were running physical hard drives, those platters would have all of the information stored on via magnetic platters. And we would store that information very similar to how a cassette tape works, or perhaps even we could refer to a record. The information is on that one particular section of that big, huge circle. And it's not even circle. It's smaller circles inside of smaller circles all the way down to the very center of that hard drive. And we had all of that information scattered across different areas of the hard drive. Now, it required a physical move of these items, heads, much like a cassette player had a head to read the information off of the tape, or in this case, the hard drive. That head would have to move along, and you would have multiple heads on, sometimes just on one side of the platter, sometimes on both sides of the platters, depending on which hard drive you had and so forth. So you have all of these heads moving on an arm, and that arm would scoot all the way in towards the center, all the way out towards the outside, and back and forth. That's why in older computers, as it was operating, you'd hear this clicking sound. That would be the sound of the mechanism throwing the head from one section to another as the entire platter was spinning around. Now, they spin a lot faster than your regular record player. When we think about a record player, the record player might move at 33 and a third RPMs, maybe 45 RPMs, or 78 if we're talking some of these older records, really old. We're talking from the 40s and before that. So the hard drive actually moves at 5,400 or on up to 7,200 RPM. And in the enterprise world, there are even faster hard drives. So those things are already spinning very fast. But the head has to move from point A to point B to point C to point D. And that's all over the place, depending on which section of the hard drive that it was trying to read. So that's why we had to defragment it, because what happened was all of our information, as we stored additional changes to our Word documents, our databases, our Excel spreadsheets, it would store it in the next available location. And if you think about it, as you're working on a Word document, you might have that Word document spread out to 10, 15 places on the hard drive. An Excel spreadsheet, if it got larger, it might go up to 50 locations or even more. In a database, it'd be scattered all across that. But what happened with that is it has to go to each of these sections on the hard drive. I want you to think about that hundred or more, hundreds of locations. And whereas before I was saying A, B, C, D, it might have to scan all the way across, and it would find one location of the information over on one side of the hard drive. Over, if you think about north, south, east, west, it might find it up at the north side of that platter, and then it would find the next bit on the third platter down, so maybe six heads down, on the south side. So it would have to travel all the way around the, if you think about it, all around the world of this hard drive, and it would bounce back and forth, and that would slow it down. Now, that's the old way. That's how that all worked back then. Today, it's a little bit different. Because solid-state drives, they use flash memory. They have no moving parts. They can instantly access the information from anywhere across that solid-state drive. It instantly brings that information through to the computer. So we don't have all of that seek time and the delays that we had for those heads to move back and forth, for the platter to spin all the way around and so forth. When we did defragment back in the old days, we were going to take that information and we would shove the information all around, all over the hard drive, and we would move that information into a sequential section around that hard drive. So instead of it going A, B, C, D all over the place, north to west to east to south to north to wherever, all of a sudden, all of that information after we defragmented it would be at east and then north by, I forget how these go. So east to northeast to north to northwest to west to southwest to south to southeast, but even smaller sections of that. So it would be sequentially around those circles on the hard drive, and we would basically be able to bring that information through, not instantaneously, it would still have to make it to that next section on the platter, but that was okay. We lived with that. The systems were slower back then, and we would be speeding it up by moving all of that information around. Today, we don't have to worry about that because it comes as fast as the computer can pull it away from it. So that solid-state drive, the flash memory, just brought a brand new level. That's why we went from boot times of, on some systems, I would check boot times to be 5 or 6 minutes long. I'd put in a solid-state drive, and the boot time would be under 30 seconds, and it was beautiful, and I loved that. That was what we got out of solid-state drives. There is no need for us to even worry about going through and defragmenting a hard drive because the information is right there. I will tell you, it's actually also harmful to do that. Why? Because with the flash memory, you can read that information off of that drive as much as you want. You can read tons of information, and if it's static there and it's not moving around, great, you're fine. However, it does have a limitation, and it depends on the solid-state drive. The limitations, generally, we're talking about 10,000 writes per sector. Now, they do a lot of different things, a lot of different fun behind-the-scenes tricks to ensure that the system is going to have a long-term lifespan. If it's having a hard time reading the information, it will relocate it automatically. If the location has been already written to some 8,000 times, it's going to say, you know what, I'm not going to write any information there for quite a while. And it will utilize other areas across that flash drive to store all of that information. The defragmentation that I mentioned, yeah, in order for us to defragment, it would have to read the information, move it, write it somewhere else, then basically keep doing that read, write, read, write, read, write, read, write, and then it would write it all into the new locations. And that actually will start to wear down solid state drives. I hope that gives a little bit of a deeper dive into this. This is Benjamin Rockwell. You are listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment.
Micro Center, home to all kinds of electronics and computer items, has over 20 locations across the country, and it's also available at microcenter.com. This is Benjamin Rockwell of Computer Talk Radio, and I live just a couple of miles away from my local Micro Center, and I've been shopping there for years. From Apple to Windows, they've got what you need. CPUs, got them. Screwdrivers and other tools, yep. Cables, televisions, scanners, projectors, cameras, they have it all. Micro Center is a place which fills your electronic needs. What are you looking for? Media centers, monitors, mice, MP3 players, media, modems, motherboards, memory? Those are just the M's. They aren't regional, but spread across our great land from Virginia to California. Each one is service and repair, in-store clinics, and business services, too. MicroCenter.com is their online store, a place where you can get your regular online ordering needs met. From the hobbyist to the professional, the brand name, or building it yourself, MicroCenter is your resource. Check out MicroCenter.com today. MicroCenter.com.
Tracy reached out to me. She phoned me at 888-NERD-888. That's 888-637-3888. Now, Tracy's question was in regards to the viability of moving to a tablet instead of a desktop or laptop PC. Where are we sitting versus either of those? And I'm going to tell you that for certain usage, Yes, a tablet is handy. I have a couple of different tablets sitting around here, and I do enjoy tablets, but they just aren't the big, huge desktop killer, the laptop killer that everybody thought they might be. When the iPad came out years ago, there were a lot of people who dove into that direction, and they said, oh, we need a tablet. We can have access to all of the internet wherever we're at. And yes, Apple has continued to push forward as we moved along across the years. 10 years ago, we're going to look back at the end of 2014. Roughly, and this is in United States numbers, this is numbers based off of people surfing the internet, which is a primary usage of all of our devices. This is the easiest way we can see what the market share is for tablets versus smartphones versus desktops. So when we look back, we go back to United States of America, we look at StatCounter. This is the big place that I rely on when I want to look up numbers about the market share of whatever item, whether we're talking about browsers or operating systems or social media platforms, whatever it is. This is the place to go, StatCounter.com. But some of the numbers kind of give us some interesting insight that we had not considered. So we look at 2014, just about 10%. And through 2014, it ran up to 9.77%, 9.7, had a little bit of fall off when we hit December of 2014, where it went to 8.38. Now, let's fast forward 5 years. Let's go to 2019, which is just 5 years ago. In 2019, by the time we hit December, we were down to just under 5% of utilization. That's 5% of people were going to websites and they were downloading information, they were surfing the web, and that seems very counterintuitive to the idea that the future is going to be on the tablets. It gets worse, though. As of November 2024, the latest number for what we have numbers for, tablet usage was 2.21%. As a matter of fact, as we go through the year, it did not break 3% at all in the last year. That gives you kind of a glimpse at where this is. Yes, I get it. Apple is going through and they're pushing the idea of a tablet. Microsoft Surface doesn't really count as a tablet, even though it has a tablet form. And a lot of these other all-in-ones, these foldables, these different items from whether we're talking about the Lenovo or the Dell systems where it doubles as a tablet or a Windows PC because they already run Windows and they also have a built-in keyboard. Although for some of them, you can separate it off and all of that. And that's all fine and dandy. But the reality is tablet usage has dropped off significantly. So do I look to the future and see that tablet is viable? No, I don't think so. Now, let's unravel even more behind that. A lot of what we've seen with the tablets has been designed for that mobile usage. It's been designed for a usage where if you need horsepower, you're going to go to your desktop. You're going to go to that laptop. And that already starts separating that gap. So it became a very useful tool 10 years ago. But by the time we move to now, places where people are using the tablets are areas where we want to do some basics. We want to do the web surfing. We want to do some of that. But we also have realized that they have limitations. They have a certain set of setbacks that prevent us from doing the high power computational that we might want to do. Now, granted, there are the virtual machine options. Microsoft has been pushing forward with this idea of eventually moving the operating system, whether it's Windows 11 or Windows 12. Right now, it's Windows 11 as a virtual machine. So you're remote controlling a system that is actually Windows from thousands of miles away. Now, that is also going to recognize, even though it's not really built out, it's not really in a ready for prime time world, if you will, it's pushed that back to that operating system side. So there's a struggle there that we're going to have to overcome if we want to restore the idea of tablets there. And then we move into smartphones, and we start to talk about smartphones. The size of our smartphones these days is a lot larger. We can put a lot more information up on our screen. As a matter of fact, smartphones account for, these days, over half of the web surfing activities out. Half. That's pretty wild. When you start to think about it, yes, smartphones this last year have moved from that 30% mark all the way on up to a couple of times where they bounced up above 50%. That's significant. It says we've shifted where we're looking at the internet. And along with that, at the beginning of the year, 70% of the usage of the internet was done on a desktop. That is now down to 40%, just over 40%. So we have to start thinking about this. Where are we going? I'm going to tell you, with the size of screens these days on the smartphones, I think that the tablets are going to start to seriously suffer, as they have. And we'll see them drift away. We'll see them continue to fall off. They'll still be important for some people. Some people do like that operation with a bigger screen. We're talking that 10-inch, 12-inch size screen, and maybe put that in the living room. But we're not going to see a wholesale rollout across everywhere where tablets are going to replace either the desktop, the laptop, or our smartphone. This is Benjamin Rockwell. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment.
Hey guys, this is Benny Rockwell. Most of us use video cameras nowadays, but what about those old movie films in the back of your closet? Well, let me tell you about Legacy Digital Productions. They specialize in taking your old memories on film, videotape, and slides and digitizing them to DVDs. Imagine Grandpa's old 8mm and 16mm films that are just sitting in a box getting old and fading away. Legacy Digital will clean and recondition those films, capture them digitally frame by frame, and then produce beautiful DVDs of your precious memories on long-lasting archive-quality discs. They don't use a projector, and your films can't be damaged in the process, the best available for families like yours. The final results are gorgeous. What better way to preserve those precious memories for future generations? Call right now, mention my name, Benny Rockwell, and receive a 30% discount on your order. Call toll-free 1-866-2-LEGACY. That's 1-866-2-LEGACY, 1-866-253-4229. And tell them Benny sent you. Your memories are priceless, so call 866-2-LEGACY now.
This is Benjamin Rockwell, and now it's time to get down to business. This is where we talk about computers, the workplace, and how a lot of things are going. And one of the interesting surveys that came across my desk was one that talked about return to office mandates. And this was not a small survey. This wasn't a matter of a few thousand people across across a few different firms. This was 3 million workers across 54 high-tech and financial firms on the Standard & Poor's 500 Index. So we're talking something that is pretty big. We're talking huge. And what they have found is that, well, return-to-office mandates are not working out for the companies as well as they would like. So the paper comes from the University of Pittsburgh in combination with Baylor University, the Chinese University of Hong Kong, and the Cheong Kong Graduate School of Business. And it was actually published last month, but a lot of people started reading this and saying, hey, this is something to pay attention to. And to what extent? So they found that the average turnover rates for firms increased by 14% once they did a return to office mandate. A 14% uptick in turnover is not insignificant. And some people may say it's somewhat small. The problem that they found, though, is that the people who were leaving were not the average person. It was the person who was better at their job than most. We're talking about the highest of the talent within a company. We're not talking about, oh, we've got return to office, so some of the secretaries are leaving. No, we've got some of the best programmers, some of the best network analysts, some of the best, whatever it is. You know, you start looking at the high-value employees who are also, yes, very valued because of what they know, and they're moving on. And that is really, really of concern. Another interesting thing is that they found out that the effect on the turnover of one particular type of employee was almost three times higher than that of male employees. I was going to tease that. It's females versus males. Women are three times more likely to move on than men on a return to office mandate. And there is no surprise there, because female employees are definitely more interested in the work-life balance, the flexibility from the workplace, and their various responsibilities that they feel that they have to their family. And that is very good. Some of the other things that came out of this, after they examined 2 million job postings, they found out that any company that had returned to office mandates had a longer turnaround time to fill job vacancies. To what extent? 23%. That is a steep amount there. And they also found that a number of employees were actually declining. And the hire rate decreased by 17% after that return to office mandate. This is really a big deal. This is something that we're going to be struggling with as employers and employees, the two sides battling each other for the coming years. A lot of people received a taste of what working from home could be like, what it is like, the various side benefits, the lack of a commute, the lack of having to maintain a more expensive wardrobe, the ability to spend time with family, to return to family far sooner in the day. The ability to, yes, shuffle things around. In some offices that are work from home, they have additional benefits where they say, look, if you need to take a two-hour lunch, that's okay. Just tack it on at the end of the day. Make sure you get your work done. As long as you're a productive employee, as long as you are producing to your metrics, a lot of companies are really starting to feel comfortable with this. And there are others that want to do that command and control environment. They want to crack down and they want to make sure that, hey, you're coming into the office for what has really been deemed by a lot of employees as just an empty directive. Oh, you've got to come in so we can have a better cohesive team. Well, people go into the office and they find out, oh, I'm still Skyping with most of my team. I'm not sitting next to my team because we're all packed in like sardines. So the only place that they could find for our team is on the fourth floor, the seventh floor, and the ninth floor. We're a three-person team, and one person is on each of these floors. So how do we get together? How do we work this all out? How do we really develop that friendship that is required or kind of desired for the culture? And that's just not happening. People are finding that going into the office isn't really a great return of value to them as employees. Unfortunately, this is going to be a battle that's going to continue with more and more companies saying, hey, we know we said this earlier, but we've changed our mind. And others going in the other direction saying, there are some companies that are starting to back down on that return to office mandate and finding that they're reaping the rewards from it. We'll see how this all plays out. As for now, this is Benjamin Rockwell. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment. Years ago, I found a web hosting company that fit my needs as a computer nerd, as a radio show host, and, well, a normal person. Recently, though, it became clear to me that it was time to upgrade. I had a choice between my old plan and the new one at 7 times the cost. It was that awkward point where I could choose between a sip of water or being dunked in a pool. I searched around, comparing the many options for someone like me. After looking for 3 weeks, there it was, SiteGround. In proper fashion, I tested their customer service, their knowledge, and their care, their willingness to do things the right way. The SiteGround salesman made sure that I didn't overbuy and get a 50-gallon bucket when all I needed was a 1-gallon bucket. The folks at SiteGround know WordPress, Joomla, and more. SiteGround.com, S-I-T-E, ground.com, for your web hosting needs. SiteGround. Jerry reached out to me, and Jerry had a concern in regards to Blu-ray players. He's got a lot of Blu-ray discs, and he's concerned with the exit of LG and a few others from that market. And he's concerned, and I don't blame him. Now let's talk about what is going to be the eventual demise of Blu-ray players. This isn't going to be one of those situations where all of a sudden you're not able to buy any LG players off the market. It is going to take some time for all of these to work their way on out. When we can look to the past, today you can still, it's difficult, you can still locate brand new VHS players. Why you'd want to do that, I'm not sure. Well, actually I am. Because I have a number of VHS tapes from back in the day. Some of them have movies that are not available on Disney because Disney hasn't put their entire library up there. And we can start talking about DVDs. DVDs still haven't gone anywhere. And we have, a lot of us have many huge libraries of DVDs. I've got probably a few hundred of them. Now, one of the things I'm doing is I am going through and I am in the process of taking the information on those DVDs and I'm relocating them to a Plex server. A Plex server is much like your own personal Netflix server that resides in your house. And you need a special system to do that. Not so special. You know, I started to say that and I realized, so you can do this on a NAS, you can do this on an old PC, you can do this on an old Mac, and you can also do this, I believe, over in the Linux world as well. And what it does is it stores all of the information from that DVD or Blu-ray onto a hard drive. The size of information that is on your typical DVD is a matter of 2 gigabytes, maybe 4 gigabytes if you're really pushing it. Blu-ray goes a bit further, but the idea of all of that information being stored on a hard drive where we have hard drives that are many terabytes in size these days for very little amounts of dollars means that that is kind of a direction we're all going to need to go in. At least if we want to retain that which we've paid for. And it's a viable route. As far as Blu-ray players, yes, they are going to slowly drift off the market because people are not buying them. They are going to be out there. You're still going to be able to get them. Yes, initially, I'm going to suggest that we're going to see a little bit of a run on Blu-ray players, but not a whole lot. Because it's not like they're getting rid of Blu-ray players simply because They don't care. It's because there's not a market there for them anymore. So I went on to Amazon, and I looked across Amazon, and there are a ton of external Blu-ray players that you can get for your system that will allow you to, yes, play your Blu-ray discs off of your computer, store them on a Plex server, and then, yes, continue to watch those movies for many years to come. This is Benjamin Rockwell. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. We'll catch you next week.
Let me tell you about The Radio Factory, an exciting new venue for talk radio. It's the internet, the wave of the present. My name is Benjamin Rockwell, and I'm the host of a syndicated radio program, Computer Talk Radio, so I know the internet is here and now. Many of the hosts at theradiofactory.com have their own podcasts or radio shows across the country, but many people like the comfort of listening to their own special radio show at a specific time and day, much like we watch live television. The internet, as you're probably aware, is a powerful tool that allows The Radio Factory to deliver unique programming with far more variety than the windbags who are simply about contriving up viewpoints to get you riled up. Additionally, you'll find that many of the programs are shorter, giving more information in less time. Stick with theradiofactory.com and see how it evolves to keep you entertained, interested, informed, and above all, intelligent. After all, the Radio Factory motto is building your intelligence one talk show at a time. Theradiofactory.com.